98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Doug and Wolf's Rush Hour Reboot. Getting you up to speed on everything happening in sports this morning. Rush Hour Reboot.
Maloney just walked into Paul's stall in the Oxygen Community Studios to lead us in the Rush Hour Reboot. I always forget the name that you tried to dub the stall.
I didn't. Someone else
I think
did.
It was like the kennel.
Yeah, I mean, I know she's the greatest dog lover of all time, but that's just weird. There's one kennel, and that's up in Spokane. I am college basketball, by the way. You want to talk college basketball?
No, thank you.
Okay.
Not right now. Maybe tomorrow. Tomorrow we got a big game, right? Tomorrow's Thursday?
Yeah.
On the look-aheads, when I recorded them, I said coming up on Tuesday, and I had to re-record it.
For ASU, that's UCLA?
No.
You were just so focused on it?
For today. That's how messed up I am with my week.
Oh, because of Oregon's loss, it's still screwing with you?
No, just my short work week last week. Do you
I
know
see.
What that was? I don't think so. But the NFL Combine continues this week in Indianapolis. Yesterday, we found out that the Cards had met with wide receivers Jerry Jeudy and CeeDee Lamb.
Yeah, I've met with the Cardinals already. I like the coaching staff. Met with the GM. Kind of vibing a little bit and all great energy.
Today, we learned that the Cards have also met with Mekhi Becton and now Tristan Wirfs. Here's NFL analyst Charles Davis on with Bickley and Marotta yesterday.
Becton is you know, he's his own mount. You know, I mean, he's Mount Becton. And I think that is something that you consider. But I think he's got good feet.
Mount Becton. But take all of the defensive players out of the draft. Don't want to hear it. There's four players on the board.
Derrick Brown.
Stop. I said take all the defensive players out of the draft.
I'll play him at fullback now.
Then I'm not asking you the question. Rudy, so take everybody else out of the draft. You have four players. Jerry Jeudy, CeeDee Lamb, Tristan Wirfs, or Mekhi Becton. Which one are you taking?
That's a really tough question, but...
No, it's not. The answer is Jeudy.
For me, I'm probably going with Tristan Wirfs or Mekhi Becton. I'm going offensive line.
Even though Judy's better.
I'm going offensive line, and I'm taking one of the other 18 wide receivers that are going to be a top two-round, three-round pick.
So as the Cardinals continue to do their homework and weigh their options in Indianapolis this week, would they be willing to trade back?
Yeah, again, depending on what's there on the board, we'll continue to trust our board as we have in the past. And if there are opportunities to move back and acquire more picks, I think we'll do it.
Would you like to see the Cardinals trade back?
I'm going to say no. And the reason why, and I love trading back normally, but the reason why you trade back is because Javon Kinlaw's gone. It's because Derrick Brown's gone. And I don't want those guys gone. I want one of those two as
okay,
a Cardinal.
Okay, so then say, for example, Jerry Jeudy's there. Do you want them to trade back and not take Jerry Jeudy?
No, I want Jerry Jeudy too.
Okay.
Those are my
so
magic
add him
three.
To your other those defensive friends.
Yeah, then I'll play Jerry Jeudy both ways too. I want one of those three in the draft, but in the ranking order of Jeudy third, Kinlaw second, Derrick Brown first.
Look, I just think this Arizona Cardinals team has so many needs right now. They have so many needs. They need starters. They need backup. They need depth players. They need special teams players. To me, this could be a perfect opportunity for Steve Keim and the Arizona Cardinals to trade back in this draft, acquire a bunch of picks in this draft, in the next year's draft, and see what they can build.
Cliff Kingsbury had a very open conversation on the Ryan Russillo podcast. He discussed what was going through his head during that first game against the Lions.
Yeah, I'm not exaggerating. I was thinking, I can't believe I just bought that house. Like, I'm going to be here two games and they're going to fire me.
He even went on to say this.
But I just kept thinking about poor Steve up there in the press box with the owner, who probably wanted to jump off the balcony.
First, I've never heard Cliff really have a conversation
like that.
What was your reaction when you heard Cliff's comments?
My reaction was, number one, what are you doing, Bick? How did Ryan Russillo get that out of him and you didn't? So I blame Dan Bickley
for they did get that really good quote where they asked him about, would you give up playing football over a helmet, like the whole Antonio Brown?
Yeah,
He's like, I don't even think I love a woman enough to give up football.
Yeah.
That was a good quote.
So I just wanted to take a shot at Bick. But secondly, my number one thought is, why did he choose to be so honest there? Because he is so guarded on so many different things. I wish Cliff Kingsbury would realize how likable of a dude he is if he allows people to like him. And that'll go a long way when you have halves like you had against Detroit.
I totally agree with that comment. We talked about it earlier. I think it's important for a guy like Cliff to show his personality a little bit, not just to his team, not just to his team and the people in the building, but also to the fan base. I think that Cliff is a guy that can be funny. He can be charismatic. He has a good personality. And like you said, if he allows people to like him, I think he can endear this city to him a little bit more.
Yeah.
The NFLPA Board of Player Representatives voted to send the proposed collective bargaining agreement to the membership for a vote. Here's Mike Golick from Golick and Wingo this morning.
There is no way on God's green earth this will not pass.
Do you agree?
Wait. There is no way that this will not pass. So, meaning it will pass.
There is no way on God's green earth this will not pass.
Okay, fight on Fighting Irish there. And I meant to throw in a USC slam. I do think it's totally going to pass. I totally believe it's going to pass. But I do also think that I'm amazed at just how rigged this is and how few players care. It says in your constitution you cannot do the vote the way you're doing it. But because that's not convenient for what a group of players want, they're going to go over the head of some players and violate their own constitution. That makes no sense. Why even have a constitution? Just vote one guy and say, Lorenzo Alexander, you handle everything, and be done with it. If you're not even going to follow your own constitution. This is such a sham. And I'm not blaming the NFL for it at all. I'm looking at the Players Association, and I tell you, I'm going to be so numb to any player complaint about this CBA when their own Players Association violated their constitution.
You're 100% correct. It's incredibly frustrating. I mean, look, this CBA has been being talked about for a while, and there's been only a handful of players who have even come out and commented on any of it. The fact of the matter is most of these players don't care. They don't know what's in the CBA. The vast majority of these guys just hoping to make a team. The other guys got all their money anyway, so they don't really care. Just look at what's going on at the combine. I don't know how much time we have, but it's nonstop argument over a collective bargaining agreement. The NFL has changed the times for the combine. They've changed the drills for the combine. They've done all kinds of things to create a whole bunch of revenue for the combine. How much do the players get to the combine? $0. I don't understand. This is how much the players don't even understand their own leverage or their own worth. If this entire draft class said, we're not going to the combine this year. I mean, they have the power to do that. They're like, yeah. Nope, we're not going to do that.
They're not under contract.
We're not going to do that. And the crazy thing is you would think that their agents would be on them about this, because the agents have to pay so much money to recruit these kids, to sign these kids, to feed these kids, and to train these kids for the combine. The agent should say, my 3% fee, I'm going to make way more money on my guys if I'm not having to spend $100,000 to train them and feed them and pay for their housing for this whole process. I can't believe the agents aren't a big part of this.
I agree.
The wait is almost over for D-backs fans.
Bumgarner will start on Thursday. I know I've been telling you and speculating that it would be later in the week. So Thursday will be a start.
What do you want to see from the D-backs ace in his first spring start?
I want him to ride to the mound on a horse. That's what I want to see.
I think the horse would take one step to the mound.
That's. I want to see him come from the bullpen, ride in on a horse, and then rope Jake Lamb or something.
I want
to
see when Torrey takes him out. I want him to bring out a lasso.
Absolutely.
Or something.
How about he ropes Baxter?
Baxter can deal
with
that.
It'd be a little weird to rope Jake Lamb.
But I remember...
Why Jake Lamb?
Baxter...
Why do you want him to rope Jake Lamb?
Because his last name is an animal.
Yeah. See, that if you were taller, you would have got that. I look at it and say, A, Baxter's kind of funny, but it would have been funny years ago because Baxter used to be funnier, and I don't know why it's different now, but Baxter's not as funny as he used to be. Number two, you got to play this up. You got to play this up big time. I mean, let's just run with the Mason Saunders thing all year long.
I mean, I think it's hilarious. I mean, look, I think Madison Bumgarner and the whole Mason Saunders thing is pretty hilarious. But, I mean, to be honest with you, I want to see Madison Bumgarner play great this year. I want to see him pitch well. I want to see him win a bunch of games. And I want to see him make a difference for this organization.
Yeah, absolutely. And so that's today. Tomorrow, as today is Luke Weaver and Merrill Kelly against
today,
Oakland.
Today, he's still Mason Saunders. Tomorrow, he'll be Madison Bumgarner.
Come on, Mason. You can do it, buddy. Coming up next, the latest on the NFL CBA. Will this pass easily? And why did you have to violate your own constitution and tell us you're not really violating your own constitution to do it? It's coming up on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Very late night, and a strange story that came out of the NFL talks and the CBA yesterday. You didn't hear about it. Let me give you a little bit of an update on it. Rudy Carpenter's in the Auction Community Studios with me, filling in for Wolf today. Wolf will be back tomorrow. And it looks like, for you as a fan, the number one thing I assume you care about is just tell me if there's going to be a work stoppage. And I'm willing to say there's a 95% chance the answer to that question is no. There's not going to be a work stoppage. The old agreement expires at the end of this year. If they vote yes on a new agreement, when I say they, I mean the NFL Players Association, what you will end up have happening is you will see that get put into place now, and the old CBA goes away. If they vote no on this, the old CBA stays in place, and then they'll start up negotiations whenever they want. And I don't believe they're going to get a better deal than what they have. So I do think they should vote yes. But I'm saying that because I don't trust their union. I don't trust the people in the union, and I don't even mean that as a slam on any one individual. I don't think the players are really, truly willing to do what it takes to get a better offer. And since they're not, they're negotiating against themselves. I got a great phrase that my original owner back in Alabama used to say to me. When I say my original owner, the guy that owned the radio station I worked for, he said, if you're not willing to walk away from the table, you're not negotiating, you're begging. And when you let that wash over you, and that to me is what the players are doing, because it's not like they really will miss 4 games, 5 games, 12 games, something like that, and stand up for what they believe in. So then you're just begging for the best deal that you can get, and I think that's where they are.
Well, I have a lot of issues about. There are a lot of issues that I have with this, and I just don't know how deep people want to go. But let's just also remember that the players have no idea what they're talking about in the negotiation here. They're not going to get the best deal they possibly could have, and yet we're going to hear all of these guys complain, and we're going to hear a lot of them complain about these owners and comparing them to, you know, really bad people, like we've heard some of these guys do in the social justice stuff. I don't even want to get into all that, but it's a problem because you have all of these dudes in the NFL who are tweeting every day and talking social justice and talking all of these things. They don't even understand what's in their own contracts, in their own employment. These are guys who are making unbelievable amounts of money, but they don't have any idea how the money works, how the benefits works, how the benefits programs work. They have no idea. They have zero concept
and
of
you
this.
And for those of you who don't know, Rudy Carpenter spent 5 years in the league. You saw guys in your own locker room that are exactly as you're describing.
Listen, the NFL does a really good job creating programs, okay? I played in the NFL like you just did, and I have a great pension when I can collect on that. The NFL has a 2-to-1 401k match. Oh. You're essentially getting $50,000 a year. You would like that. There's a great HRA medical reimbursement plan that's pretty good. I think it could be better. It was, like Jay Feely said, it was the better alternative. We would have loved lifetime health care. They weren't going to go there, so we created a medical reimbursement plan. It's not bad. I got like $100,000 in my reimbursement plan. I don't ever have to use it, but if I want to, I just send them a receipt, get a check back for whatever the medical bill was.
Wow.
It's not a bad deal, okay? But there's a lot more players can do on this deal. I don't want to talk a ton about this deal yet because I don't think anybody truly knows what is in this deal.
That's what's so weird about this. If you haven't been following, it's really simple. There's an executive council, which are not the team reps. There are team reps, which is not the full body. The executive council can vote all they want on whether they approve or disapprove the deal. But here's what's weird about that. A, they're the ones that negotiated it. So why would you ever vote against the deal that you yourself were part of the negotiations on? And B, their vote really doesn't matter. It's kind of like a guideline if anybody chooses to listen to it. The Constitution says it's supposed to be team reps, 2/3 of the vote. Then if they give 2/3 of the vote, now it goes to all members of the union. Yet the executive council has voted to skip the step of the player reps voting. That to me is a clear-cut sign that says your player reps are voting no. And if your player reps are voting no, if you don't like it, fine, but change your constitution. You didn't change the Constitution. You're actually avoiding what your Constitution says. And the players don't seem to have a problem with that.
Well, from what I've heard and seen, you know, why I think that they're trying to skip the player reps is because this deal is a little bit better for some of the they made some concessions for the back end of the roster. They give some of the back end of the roster as a $90,000 pay raise in year one. And so that's the majority of or not in year one, but just in their minimum salaries each year. So that's the majority of the NFL. So yeah, you want to skip the player reps are usually the guys who are your big pay guys or guys veterans have been in the NFL for a long time. So when you want to skip over those guys who are saying no and get to all the young players who are happy to take a $90,000 pay raise and sign the deal today and get back to OTAs and training camp. And so that's part of the problem. But here's the other thing. The NFL and the NFLPA, the NFLPA especially, when I was in the NFL and we were going through a new CBA, they would bring representatives to the facility to talk about how the voting works, what the deal looks like, what the benefits look like. And those meetings would always be after practice and after meetings. I went to every one of those meetings on two different teams. I was one of maybe four or five guys on the team who went to any of those meetings.
Wow.
They were empty. Nobody cares about this stuff. And that's the dirty little secret in the NFL that and in all professional
that the owners know.
That the owners know. These guys don't save their money, and they truly don't care. They just want to sign a deal and play. And the worst part about this deal, I think, is that the big talking point is going to be that the players in the NFL get more revenue share now than any other league out there. And to me, that's such a dishonest thing to say. To me, that's such a dishonest thing to say, especially when you consider guaranteed money and how when you see a basketball player get a contract as a fan, you know exactly what he's getting paid. Bobby Bonilla is still getting paid. Okay? In the NFL, you don't know.
Yeah.
You have no idea because it's so convoluted, and you have to look and try to figure out the difference in guaranteed money and roster bonus and injury and all of this stuff. Just think about this. In the NFL, if you're a rookie, you're a fourth-round pick rookie, you get a $780,000 signing bonus, you have a base salary of $480,000, you may have made a little bit of money in marketing, but you go play. You work hard, you're playing, they put you on special teams, you tear your ACL. Oh, man, you get an MRI, bad news, torn ACL, you're out for the season. Well, that same day, the team's also going to let you cut your pay in half. Because in the NFL, if you're on your rookie deal, you have an injury split in your contract, most likely, outside of a first-round pick. If you have an injury split in your contract, that allows an NFL team to cut your salary in half when they put you on injured reserve. If you're making $480,000, you're now making $240,000. Not only did you tear your ACL, not only are you having to get surgery, not only do you now not have an offseason because the team's going to want you to stay there and rehab, but they're also going to cut your pay in half prorated for the rest of the year, and that's just what you have to do. There's no negotiation. To me, that's unbelievable.
Yeah.
That is unbelievable. That wouldn't be allowed anywhere else.
And yet the players accept it, and I don't want to hear the player gripe about it unless you're standing up in the CBA like you were when you're actually in the meeting. There's a lot there. To you as a fan, if you're saying, okay, how does this affect me? I would say your fantasy draft should happen after preseason game number three. Because now there's going to be only three preseason games, not four, but they're not changing the calendar. So all that's changing is that everybody remembers that Thursday night preseason game that always happens right before Labor Day weekend. That's now gone. But that week still stays. And you still don't play your first game of week one until after Labor Day weekend. So now why hold your fantasy draft in the middle of the preseason when somebody might get hurt, somebody might get cut, somebody might get traded, or a new player comes in that's better? Wait until after that third preseason game, and you don't have to worry about anybody doing anything in week four.
One of the things I do like about this deal, though, is that they're talking about increasing the active roster from 53 to 55. I like that. They're talking about adding more players to the active game day. I believe 48 players can dress on game day now instead of 46 guys.
Correct.
I like that. They're talking about adding more guys to the practice squad. Those are all things that I think are good, and I think that's what the NFL is trying to do. The owners are trying to attack the young players and get those guys to sign off on this deal.
And it's better for them than they should. Coming up next, do we actually have a little bit of light into the future of Kenyon Drake? It's coming up on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. It's kind of hard to know what you can believe, what you can't believe, or if there's anything at all you can believe. But Steve Keim was asked about Kenyon Drake and kind of gave a standard answer.
Certainly a guy we would like to have back, but again, not sure what the market's going to do. I do know this. He took full advantage of his opportunity. I was really proud to see the not only his work ethic, but the skill set that he has is so unique. His ability to run the stretch the way he does, the ability to catch the ball to the backfield. To be able to have him and David and obviously chasing the same backfield, it really presented some problems for other teams.
Rudy Carpenter's the former ASU quarterback's filling in for Wolf. How did you feel about the end of the year David Johnson, Kenyon Drake? Because I like a first-year head coach establishing in the locker room, you understand my offense, you do my offense better, you're the one that gets playing time, that's it, I don't care about your contract. But there's a pretty good theory that says if you don't get Kenyon Drake to sign an extension, why in the world would you not keep David Johnson going because he might be your only running back next year?
I agree, and I think it was a very weird predicament. I think it's a very weird situation that the organization is in right now. I really do believe that. Now, here's my problem with what Cliff Kingsbury did. Do I understand why the organization did what they did? Yes. Do I understand why Cliff Kingsbury did what he did with Kenyon Drake? Yes. Did Kenyon Drake deserve to be the player with the ball in his hands at the end of the season? Yes, I believe all of those things. With that being said, on the NFL level, you only have 53 players. You only have 46 guys who are dressing and playing on a game day. And if you're going to have David Johnson on your roster, if you're going to have David Johnson dress and play in games, don't just have him sitting there with his shoulder pads and helmet on, standing on the sidelines, not doing anything. Find a way to make this guy a dynamic player or at least contribute to your offense. And last year, one of the places that David Johnson contributed the most was playing wide receiver. I mean, I thought that was the entire point of this offense, was to be creative. Mm-hmm. Let's stop looking at guys as positions or a certain number. Let's get guys lined up. Let's get guys mismatches. Let's hand David Johnson the ball. Let's line him up wide receiver and give him a fly sweep. Let's line him up wide receiver and throw him a ball. Let's line him up in the backfield and hand the ball to him. Let's run a swing screen to him. Let's line him up in the back and run an option right on a linebacker. Let's figure out ways to get David Johnson more involved, more engaged, and bought into this team. I just think that when you don't have a college team of 85 players on scholarship, you just don't have the luxury just to put players to the side.
But until week 17, Rudy, where he was sitting there without his helmet and might as well have just been deactivated, right? It might have been a healthy scratch for all intents and purposes.
They should have done that then.
The first 16 weeks of the season, you don't think they tried? They tried to incorporate him in every single way they could into the game plan. The running game, the passing game, minus whatever games he missed because of injury. There were a handful of games he was out because of injury. But otherwise, they tried to make him the focal point of the offense. And he didn't deliver on the production wasn't there. He was the third string running back by the end of the year. And that was a spot that was earned. Chase Edmonds got his chance, and he had over 100 yards rushing and three separate 20-plus yard touchdown runs. When Kenyon Drake got his touches, he averaged 5.2 yards a carry. The production just wasn't there for number 31.
I'm not disagreeing with you. I mean, I totally understand the argument. I totally understand the point. I get it. I'm just saying when you don't have a ton of players on your roster who can play, the decision should be, okay, David, you're not a guy for us anymore. You're inactive. Let's just get done with this right now. You're inactive. Go stand over there. Keep your hat on. Keep your shirt on. Keep your shorts on. Go eat sunflower seeds. Jot down plays. Go stand over there. You're not a part of this program anymore.
And ostensibly, that's what he was in week 17. Now, maybe because of emergency purposes, maybe because Chase Edmonds was still nursing an injury at that point. If somehow, you know, they got down running backs.
What do you think? I agree with you, but I'm asking you, what do you think the relationship is like right now between David Johnson and this organization? Do we really believe they're going to trade David Johnson?
I believe they're going to trade David Johnson.
If there was a market, they would. I don't believe it's feasible that someone will make it right.
The contract is obnoxious, but I also think you're the gap, and I have to look it up. I don't have the number in front of me. I think the gap between trading him and keeping him is like $2.5 million or $3 million. That now to me, you're getting stuck either way. Whether you keep him or you don't. So if you're getting stuck either way, does $3 million really move the needle? I mean, once we're getting, and again, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I think it's something like if they trade him, it's a $13.5 million cap hit. If they keep him, it's like 16. okay? Please give me a lot of leeway in me throwing out numbers at you. But if I'm even remotely right, then it's almost, well, why not trade him? Because you're going to get stuck either way.
Let me ask you this, Paul, because you're around there much more than I am. You're around the locker room. You're around the team facility a lot more than I am. I've been on some teams before when we had guys who were in a David Johnson situation where they weren't happy, they were disgruntled, there was friction between the coaching staff, the organization, and that player. But that player was still a very popular guy in the locker room. That player, we felt like, hey, man, they're screwing you. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I'm asking you,
not only do I not see friction, what's interesting is he kept meeting the media all the way through the final week of the season. I gave him props because there was a lot of blowback, particularly on these airwaves, and there was a lot of criticism and a lot of pointed comments, and he still got in front of his locker every Friday and met the media and answered all those, and it was a lot of the same questions week after week, and the lack of production and why and what's going on. And he did face the media, and in the locker room, he still has the respect of the guys from what I can gauge. So it's not a relationship issue.
And
it's just a performance issue.
I think he's such a good guy. I don't think anybody on the locker room is going to turn on him because you would agree.
He was
the
Walter Payton Man of the Year for the Cardinals.
You would know better than me, Rudy, but I think when a guy gives all he has, is trying as hard as he can, and it's just not working – I don't think guys in the locker room turn on you in that situation.
Yeah, but I just don't believe that's the issue because when we talk about this, I think David Johnson's demeanor sometimes really hurts him because he looks lackadaisical.
Yes.
He looks like he's not trying. He looks like he doesn't care as much. And to me, that makes me wonder what the relationship between him and Cliff Kingsbury is, what the relationship between him and Steve Keim is. And so that's all I'm getting at. I just don't see what the way out is.
To me, too, I thought it was important that a first-year head coach – made sure everyone knew, and he proved everyone that guess what? If you're not playing well, you're not going to play, period.
I agree.
And he needed to do that, I think, as a first-year head coach. Doesn't matter who you are, if you're not performing, guess what? You will not find the field.
But now what do you do if you don't – now what happens, though? All those guys in the locker room, Patrick Peterson, Tyrann Mathieu, all these guys who have been around who are now saying, you guys signed David Johnson. He was a great player. You bring in Cliff Kingsbury. He can't do anything with him. You go and trade for Kenyon Drake. He's now a Seattle Seahawk, or he's now a whatever he is, you know what I mean? And now we're back with David Johnson. Then what happens?
I don't know, and I'm fascinated by that exact thing, and hopefully we find out soon. I want to talk more about this, and I'll talk to Maloney about when we can do it because it is the number one issue for the Cardinals other than, obviously, the draft. Coming up next, did Mike Hazen know about Mason Saunders, and when did he know? That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Doug and Wolf Mornings on the home of Arizona Diamondbacks baseball. 98.7 FM, Arizona's Sports Station. Diamondbacks front office focus, presented by Cox Business. You can expect more from Cox Business. Switch today at coxbusiness.com.
It started yesterday with Torrey Lovello on with Burns and Gambo every Tuesday at 2:30. And now our front office focus here on the Doug and Wolf Show starts today. Every Wednesday at 8:45, a member of the Diamondbacks front office will join us on the Coulter Automotive Group's Forge Line. Rudy Carpenter's in here filling in for Ron Wolfley, and the general manager, Mike Hazen, is called in. First of all, Mike, good morning. I can tell you, I've always been on this soapbox of we need more athletes, especially in young ages, to play different sports. I think it's vitally important. So I ask you, will you ever go to a rodeo to find a starting pitcher?
How did I wonder what the first question was going to be about when I called in? That's fair. No, I will not be going to a rodeo. I watch it on TV sometimes when I'm, just going through the channels. But no, maybe I will. Who knows? I mean, it looks very interesting. I know these guys are pretty elite at what they do, and I've had the chance to, in recent days, brush up on it a little bit. So it seems like a pretty interesting sport.
Well, you know more than I do. I didn't know you could make $26,000 in a Wickenburg weekend. So I consider myself much more educated. This is so – normally the type of old school guy that gets mad about this. Oh, it's selfish. It's this. And all the things you've heard in the past. But I got to tell you, this one was so funny, I couldn't get mad at it. What was your initial reaction when you found out that you signed Mason Saunders and had no idea who Mason Saunders was?
Yeah, I've seen aliases through the course of many years in baseball. Pretty much in every road city, you see the rooming list and you see your yearly alias list, and they can be quite humorous at times. And this one was no different. So you know, it was like I said the other day. Look, it happened before he got here. He has been riding horses his entire life. We knew it was part of what he loved to do as we were doing background on him, in signing here. Mm-hmm. And I think it was one of our advantages, where we were situated to trying to be able to sign him. And, you know, look, players have things outside in their lives that they do in the off season when we want them to, you know, be able to take a deep breath, get away from the game. The game can be very, very tiresome mentally, just given the grind of the 7 months of a season. But we want it done safely too. I think his health and safety is number one priority for us and for him. Mm-hmm. And when we've talked to him over the last few months, we know where his priorities are in terms of helping us win and get into the postseason and move on from there.
We're talking to the general manager, Mike Hazen, of the Diamondbacks. More of a philosophical question for the Diamondbacks. We all know there are contract clauses that say you can't be skydiving. I'm assuming being in rodeo is included, race car driving. But you also know you got to get a break. You got to be a human. You got to be who you are. What is the Diamondbacks policy? Is it off-season only? Is it, okay, maybe all-star break, it's okay? Or is it talk to us? Like, what did you want the Mason Saunders of the world and any player to do going forward?
Yeah, I'm not going to get into any specifics on that type of stuff. It's a fair question, and I totally get it. That stuff will stay with us in-house and how those things get handled. I think you hit the nail on the head. Look, guys need to get breaks from the game, whatever it is, but they need to do so in a manner that's going to put their health and safety first, and that of their teammates and their team and themselves for their own career and what they're trying to accomplish. And he's got a lot to accomplish, and he's already accomplished a ton. I think there's some grander things probably on the horizon for him, given what he's done so far in his career, and we want to help him get there.
I'm going to switch gears on you, Mike, a little bit and talk about the start of the season. I'm not a baseball guy, and so when I sit back a lot of times and I watch the baseball season unfold, especially in the first month of the season or month and a half of the season, you hear so many teams talk about, yeah, we got a 5-game losing streak or a 6-game losing streak or whatever it may be, but, oh, we're so early. We're still trying to figure out who we are. And then it's by the end of the season, it's like they're 5 or 6 games out of the playoff race. You start to wonder, like, how often do these early games affect a team? And so my question for you is what do you guys have to do as an organization to make sure you start out fast winning baseball games?
I don't know. We go back and forth on that. I will say, fortunately, for the 3 years we've been here, we have gotten off to very good starts. Mm-hmm. And so that has not been our issue at all. I think the reverse has been our issue at times, 18 and 19 specifically. And 19 was a little bit different because we kind of clawed back up. The sort of lull happened in the middle. And then, you know, we were clicking. Probably the best baseball we were playing was in early September before we kind of hit that stretch at the end of Cincinnati and into New York. 18 was sort of that slow slide down from the start of September to the end of September. But in 17, you know, we kind of picked it back up. But I think all 3 years we've gotten off to pretty good starts. I think it is important for a team. I think it's important for a team in our position, especially, you know, I think you look at the Dodgers in 18, they were terrible at the beginning of the season and they ended up winning the division. So I you talk about it a lot. You can't win the division in April. You can lose the division in April. I don't know how much stock I put in all of that. I think what's important to us is playing consistent, good baseball every month of every season, consistent good baseball every day we go out there and play. That doesn't mean you're going to win all those games. It just means there has to be a quality and a brand of baseball that we are playing that at the end of a long season, unlike some other sports where it's more probably a game-to-game sprint, in our sport, I think you're measured over the entirety of your season, and the more consistent you are, I think the more you deserve to be playing in the playoffs, and that's what we want to be at the end of the season.
Yeah, I think you're obviously a progressive thinking guy, a forward thinking guy, a guy that likes all of the information. You're making decisions for this ball club. This year, has there been personally for you any philosophical changes for how you see this team, this roster, how you guys want to go about this season?
I don't think there's anything. I think what I have appreciated over the last 3 years is that the way Torrey manages a team and prepares a team to play, I have very little doubt that we are ready to perform on a nightly basis. I think that has been a constant in our clubhouse. That has been a constant with our players. I have even through the down periods, and we've certainly had some, you still hear that. I think that's probably the most important thing to hold on to. What I do think we have focused a little bit of time and energy on, and look, it's 6 months from now. So getting through, in your first question, when you asked me about April or the early part of the season, April and May, that is just as important. I think is, look, let's examine September to some degree and where have we come up short and are there things that we can make adjustments to? I think health and rest for our players is a reflection on me because it means I haven't really given the manager, I think, 12 to 13 position players that he can cycle through to keep guys from getting 650 plate appearances. I think that's something that, we've kind of hit on a little bit. So even though Nick Ahmed and David Peralta and Ketel Marte want to play 162, and trust me, they want to play 162, I think it's in our interest as a team and their interest individually to be able to take step backs during the season, a couple games here or there that allow us to still win that night, but at the same time, give them some gas in the tank when we're kind of making that final push. So things like that we have focused in on. But as far as execution and how we play, look, we still believe pitching and defense is critical to what we're going to do. We still plan on running the bases better than anybody in baseball. And I feel like that's been a constant for us, that we have done that. Those types of things are going to be important for us now and in the future.
General Manager Mike Hazen joining Doug and Wolf with Rudy Carpenter filling in for Wolf today. It was painfully obvious that I couldn't hit a curveball. I just wanted to be a guy that talked about baseball. And in all the years I've been covering the sport, I have never heard any player talk positively about a general manager after arbitration. And Archie Bradley sat and told Wolf and I last week how much more respect he had for you after arbitration. So let's talk about your favorite subject, and that's you, because I know you hate talking about you. But this is a big deal. Have you ever heard any player speak positively about his front office and how proud he is to be a member of that organization after they got ripped in an arbitration like every player gets ripped?
I'm not going to spend a lot of time talking about that process. Where it's not anybody's favorite process. It's not ours. It's probably not the players. It is what it is. It's a system we have. I think the challenge of coming out the other side is, everybody understanding that sort of a piece to all of our business that we like to, we talk about family, and there's this small pieces of business that get sprinkled in here that can put us at odds. I think having respect for the process is the most important part of that, and understanding those things. I think, the thing that I take out of what Archie has done this off season, I will just tell you for 3 years, Archie has under the radar, when nobody's watching, talked to us about winning. I don't care what role you put me in, sign Fernando Rodney. I don't care what role you put me in, sign Brad Boxberger. I don't care what role you put me in, we signed Greg Holland. That was a consistent theme for 3 years for Archie Bradley. Probably knowing that being in the closer role is what pays in arbitration, right? That is part of that process. And so having that understanding of who he is, I think is important for people to understand that for 3 years through all that, when he could have made the case after 17, I deserve to close. I am the best reliever in this bullpen. And he was. He had probably the best relief season out of anybody in baseball that year. That message, even after and during this 18 season, was whatever you need to do to win baseball games, I will play a part in that. And I don't have to be in any particular role. I will pitch the seventh. I'll pitch the eighth. I'll pitch the ninth. Just let's win. So I think people need to understand that about Archie Bradley.
So in 2020, is he your closer?
You know, I've said the same thing. He is the incumbent coming out of September of 2019. I think that incumbency is going to mean something. It's not going to remove the theme of competition for our camp. Competition has to be what drives us. We finished 21 games out of the division last year. For me or anyone to sit here and think, hey, we're right where we need to be, is not, to me, the attitude that I want all of us, from me, Tori, all the way down, to be talking about every day. And so competition is still a thing. We are very aware of what he did in the last 2 months of the season last year, and we're extremely encouraged by that. And we have no doubt that he could do the role.
Other than health, what's been the best thing about the opening weekend and the first couple days of spring training games that you've seen from your
seeing
team?
Seeing sort of the back end of these games, I think over the last few years, you start to get a little more of a picture of organizational health. And I don't mean health in the physical standpoint. I mean health in terms of the depth. You've heard me say this to you before. I think it's the single biggest separation between the Dodgers and everybody else in the National League. They have constructed an organization that has, I don't really know how to aptly describe it. It is, I'll say, waves of mm-hmm. players coming through that when something falls or goes awry, there's somehow somebody waiting to step in that is even better than the person that they lost. We need to create that here. I think the back ends of these spring training games, you're starting to see the quality of players that are still waiting to even get into the game behind some of the starters. I think that is usually a good indicator of organizational health moving forward, because as those guys get better, as that next line, that should give you an indication of what happens this season when somebody gets hurt, that instead of us scurrying to make a trade or find somebody, which we have done over the last few years in April and May, it now is, okay, no problem. It's unfortunate. We don't like injuries, but somebody's ready to step right in. And that, to me, again, over the entirety of a seven-month season, becomes increasingly important.
And this last question is really simple. The next time Madison Bumgarner's in a competitive rodeo, will you be there to cheer him on?
I have a hard time seeing me strap on cowboy boots and a cowboy hat anytime in the foreseeable future. My feet are too fat to fit into cowboy boots, and that's why I wear sneakers.
Well done, Mike. Have a good week. Keep everybody healthy. Good to talk to you.
All right, guys. See
There's Mike Hayes, a general manager of the Arizona Coyotes. I was looking at Rudy of the Arizona Diamondbacks, talking specifically about, no, Archie's not our closer, but I love his reason why. We'll get into that later. Up next, could the Cardinals trade back in the draft? That's coming up on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
You've been listening to D-backs Front Office Focus, presented by Cox Business. You can expect more from Cox Business. Switch today at coxbusiness.com.